everyone. Welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. Thanks for sticking with me while I took last week off while I was traveling. It turns out that Asheville, North Carolina is number one in the country for the number of Wicca practitioners and number two in the country for Satan worshippers. Who knew? I would definitely check out Asheville because it's super weird. I'm so excited because this week we have the host of the podcast Talking Scare, Neil McRobert, on the show. Hailing from North England, he has a PhD in horror literature and has been interviewing horror writers for 84 episodes and counting, which is super cool. In our conversation, he told me why he loves horror despite having a lot of neuroses and paranoias, why he can't handle possession movies despite being an atheist, and why he can never again watch Nightmare on Elm Street. He also tells me why he thinks horror fans aren't perfectly sane. One last thing before we get into this episode, if you love the show and haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, I'd be so grateful if you could take a second to rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to us. Thank you to everyone who's already left us a review. It's so appreciated as it really helps people to find us. I think that's it. So let's get into my conversation with Neil McRobert. Hey everyone, welcome back to this week's episode. Today we have the host of the podcast Talking Scared, Neil McRobert, on the show. We connected on Twitter and I'm super excited to chat with him now. So let's bring him on. Hey Neil.
Hi, Allison. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself, where you're from, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I'm from the north of England, as you can tell. I always feel the need to apologize for my accent. It's pretty strong. I'll try and modulate it a little bit for your listeners. So, yeah, I have a podcast called Talking Scared, where every week I talk to famous, sometimes not so famous, but always interesting horror authors. Everyone from like Joe Lansdale, Carmen Maria Machado, Josh Malerman, who wrote Bird Box, is a big kind of fan of the show and kind of become a friend of mine. Yeah, so I'm this kind of nobody in the midst of the horror community from a literary sense. Weirdly, years ago, I did a PhD in horror fiction and never, ever used it. So I thought, well, I was working as a copywriter when the pandemic started, and I've got a very forgiving wife who allowed me to kind of quit my job to try and write a novel. And I set up a podcast as a kind of just a sort of side project. It's become the main project, and I'm finally using all the weird knowledge I've got. Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Awesome. So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
Everyone else answers that question so easily. I've mulled over this all week. I've got like four or five that could all vie for second place, but number one is The Descent. Neil Marshall's The Descent terrifies me.
Good pick. Yeah, that one is definitely terrifying.
Scary without the monsters. Just the claustrophobia own is terrifying.
I don't know who goes splunking like voluntarily, but they're crazy.
Yeah, I've told this a few times on podcasts, but very near me, there's a town in the Peak District in the north of England called Castleton, where they have a lot of tourist caves. You can get a boat through them and stuff like that. And every Halloween, they show The Descent inside one of the caves.
Oh, that's so cool. Have you ever gone?
No, I haven't yet, because as you'll hear as this conversation proceeds, I have all kinds of neuroses and phobias, and I'm a scared little kitten, and claustrophobia is one of them. So I can handle the cave, I can handle the film. I'm not sure I can handle the two together, but one day I'll make the pilgrimage.
Oh, cool. Well, since you have all these paranoias and neuroses, how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
I've answered this question in so many different ways. I want to say, if anyone compiles it, I'm going to sound like a liar. So it's kind of multi-stage thing. So when I was a kid, my dad, who is still with us, but he's 86 now, and he's quite an old dad, and he used to sit me down and just talk to me, kind of at me, about like Greek myths and legends. And I got massively into like cryptozoology and like, you know, the weird Bigfoot stuff and a lot of this. I'm still obsessed by that stuff. As I've got older, I've realized less and less of it is plausible, which is a real tragedy. But I still have a slight belief there is something in the great northern woods. But yes, I got into all of that sort of stuff, him just talking to me, telling me these tales. And then I have this really strong memory being on holiday with him in Greece, and we were walking to the beach, and for some reason, I'd have been like 8 years old. For some reason, he was telling me the plot to Stephen King's Carrie. No idea why. And I became obsessed by seeing this film. Just like, I just had to see it. And then, you know, I don't think it was, I don't think it was the first horror film that I watched. I watched other things first, but that really, I was obsessed and really fascinated by this story. And then I got into King in just the most fanatical way. Like, everyone says they love Stephen King. I will fight them all to the death. I am Stephen King's biggest fan. And then once I found King, it was just a steady slope. And I always did English at school. I did English at college. I did English at university. And I always leant towards the sort of dark side, really.
Very cool. What is your favorite Stephen King film adaptation?
It's a die. The Mist, I think. I was going to say Misery because I think Misery is the best adaptation in terms of how well it conveys the actual source material. But Frank Darabont's The Mist, what it does with the ending, it makes an already, it takes a really fun like B movie story, you know, people stuck in a supermarket being attacked by Lovecraftian creatures. And then in that final reel, it just makes it so much more horrifying. So it actually ups the ante on what King gave us. Yeah, probably The Mist.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's very, very depressing. I watched it for the first time last year. So,
But you don't expect the depression, do you? Because it's like a B movie. You think it's fun. It's like a 50s drive-in kind of, you know, and then that happens. And yeah, wow. I hate The Shining.
Yeah, I don't like The Shining either. So,
Good. We're amongst friends. I really don't like The Shining.
I don't find it particularly scary. So, I don't know.
But that's the problem. The Shining, people get really invested in this. And people always say to me, "Oh, you hate The Shining because you like King." It's like, yes, but that's not why I hate The Shining. It fails as both an adaptation and as a scary story in and of itself. You know, it's not a scary film. And Jack Nicholson is just, I mean, I love Jack Nicholson, but as Jack Torrance, it just starts in the wrong pitch and it goes downhill. And the thing about that film is that compared to the book, you know, the book ends in fire because it's a warm-hearted book about a broken man who loves his family and is trying to hold himself together for them. The film ends in ice because it's a cold, dispassionate movie about a broken man who loves nobody but himself. And it's just, yeah, I really don't like it.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're alone. So, why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
So I've been thinking about this because a lot of people give the same answer and they always say, you know, because it's that safe fear. I'm not so sure because I take a bit of an issue with the premise of that question. I'm not sure we are sane. I think we're all perfectly well adjusted, but you speak to people in the horror community, everyone's got all kinds of hang-ups and neurosis and things they're dealing with through horror. And what I find is that I don't have horror as that safety valve for me, where that horror really scares me. Like, it really troubles me. And I will spend, I don't have that thing where you can just go, oh, it's just a movie. Like, I'm a sane per inverted commas. I'm a kind of, you know, I understand what reality is, but I can watch a movie and I have watched movies and we'll get to this in things that have really scared me. And they bother me on a level that I don't think they're supposed to bother me on. You know, it's like above and beyond the, oh, that's scary. And I know lots of people like that who are terrified. So I'm not sure we are sane. Why we like it, I think, is because I think it gives us something we can challenge ourselves with. People like me, I might as well say this up front. I've got all kinds of anxiety issues and yeah, but et cetera. And horror is a way I can challenge those limits. So there's films that I don't want to watch because I know they'll fuck me up. And I have this compulsion to watch them to prove to myself that I can push through and handle it. That's why I like it. Other people, I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely get that idea of wanting to push yourself past your limit to see if you can handle it. I did that this week with Martyrs. So,
Really? I haven't seen Martyrs.
it's
What
there are
was
some pretty fucked up visuals. So,
Yeah, I know it. The trouble with Martyrs is I know everything that happens in it, everything, because I'm one of these people. I Wikipedia everything. I ruin cinema for myself. So I know kind of Martyrs like beat for beat. And now that I know it, I'm like, I don't. There's nothing to win by subjecting myself to that imagery because the mystery has been taken away. There's no story there for me anymore. It's just going to be here's some nasty shit, you know.
Yeah.
So, but how did you feel at the end? Did you, are you glad you watched it?
I'm glad I watched it. I'll never watch it again. It wasn't a good time, but I'm glad I watched it. It probably wasn't as bad as I was imagining. The whole sequencing of events in the movie was completely different than what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was just going to be straight torture the entire time, and it was not. So I was a little bit confused by what was going on at first, and I was like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, but it eventually got there, and it's just gross. So
where does it rank on your kind of worst things you've seen hierarchy?
I don't know. What would I say? I mean, it's probably up there. It's probably like a 9 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah. What else have I seen that's really, I always say that Saw was the only movie to ever give me nightmares, because I saw it in theaters in 2004 and I had never seen anything like it, but I rewatched it last year before Spiral came out and it wasn't as bad as I remembered. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I kind of stay away from like all that torture porn stuff.
Have you seen, because I heard one of your guests talked about saying it was the film that terrified them. Have you seen Antichrist?
I have not, no.
So I think if you've seen, because I haven't seen Martyrs, but I know enough about it. Antichrist isn't that bad. There is one scene of like just like wince-inducing mutilation, but it's a beautiful movie. It's a beautiful fairy tale about grief and these lovely, well, not lovely, but these, you know, these profound emotions. It's not torture porn. That one I really recommend.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. That's been on my list. I don't think it would affect me as much as it would affect people that have kids.
That's true.
So what's your favorite subgenre in horror?
So probably ghost stories. Although when I think about it, most of my favorite horror films don't fall into that category. Most of my favorite horror films are within categories that I don't really like that much, which is strange. Like I tend to like one from each, but I love ghost stories. I like the gothic is kind of my thing. And I love that idea that, how do I put this? So I'm less interested in the horror, i.e. the actual imagery and the gore. I mean, that doesn't bother me, but I'm less interested in that than I am in a good story about dark stuff. Do you know what I mean? So a horror film to work for me has to have a compelling narrative. It can't just be nasty imagery.
Yeah.
And often I don't really care about being scared that much. I want to be entertained, and I'm entertained by good stories. So things like, you know, in contemporary days, like The Conjuring, people now kind of think of that as a real popcorn movie. And it is. But it's a really good story. It's a really well-made, entertaining movie. But things like, you know, The Others, I just love that film. Yeah. I think it's, the twist is stellar. Tale of Two Sisters is one of the most frightening things I've ever seen in my life. Every time I look under my sink, I just, you know, hold myself in anticipation. The Woman in Black, I love. Changeling, they're kind of like your conventional gothic ghost stories. But then I love things like Lake Mungo, which Lake Mungo has gone from being something that no one even knew. Like if you're over on book, like horror book Twitter, where I spend my time lurking, everyone these days is just like obsessed by Lake Mungo. And that's just a ghost story. There's a great film called Under the Shadow, which is an Iranian movie about a djinn that is let loose. Basically, this house is bombed and the bomb doesn't explode, but it releases some kind of malignant spirit. And it's really kind of indie, low-key Iranian filmmaking with just, it's so effective. So yeah, probably the ghost story, because I like to have that thing about a mystery, something from the past that has happened that we have to tease out, rather than just like nastiness for the sake of it.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely agree. I love The Others. I love The Woman in Black. Those are all great. I have to say, I saw the twist in Tale of Two Sisters coming. So I wasn't really, I wanted to be scared by it, but I wasn't.
Wow, because that's impressive, because I pride myself on like my wife, who doesn't like horror and indulges me, like sits there like aghast. She's seen like probably 3% of the films I've seen. And she sits there like stunned when I grasp these twists. And I don't disabuse her of the notion. I let her think I'm a genius, but really, so I've just seen a lot of films, you know? So I'm good at grasping twists. But that one, I had no idea. I don't want to spoil it for the listeners either, but like, I don't know how the hell you worked it out.
Well, if you haven't seen Tale of Two Sisters, fast forward 30 seconds. I could tell because the way they were framing some of the shots, they were framing it. It should have been of both of them, but it was only of one of them.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
That's how I guessed. Yeah.
Sounds so simple when you say it like that. But yeah, I did not.
I'm not good at guessing twists. I'm a very surface level horror movie viewer for the most part. So when I caught that, I was like, oh, hey, I think something's going on. There are a lot of haunted ghosts, a lot of places with ghosts in England. Have you been to any of those places?
I've lived in one.
Oh, tell me that story.
I never saw anything, but when I was at university, I was at university in a place called Durham, which is up in the northeast of England, near Newcastle, is the biggest city that people who aren't from here have heard of. And Durham is basically it's like going to Rome, but the English version. There's a castle, and that is one of the student buildings, the actual Durham Ooh. Castle from the 11th century. And I lived in a turret of Durham Castle.
Oh,
I lived in the top turret of Durham Castle, and I was kind of like the token poor kid who they kind of allowed to come in. You know, I didn't fit in that world at all. But yeah, and it was haunted with all kinds of stuff. And so the legend went that the room below mine was bricked up. So the idea is there was a spiral staircase that went up from the ground from the ground to the top of the turret, and there were like the same number of doors off every floor, and then the floor below mine there was one door less. And the legend went that it was a bricked off room, that if you counted the windows outside you could tell there was an extra room that wasn't there, because supposedly at some time immemorial, who knows, that it had been a university for centuries, at some point someone woke up being strangled by something they couldn't see. Ooh. And then decades later supposedly a student killed himself in the same room, and they supposedly bricked this room up. Now, that sounds like complete bullshit. And I think it probably is complete bullshit, but there are too many windows on the outside of that castle. That's all I'm saying.
That's super, super creepy. Huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are your favorite horror directors?
So basically, my favorite horror films tend to be directed by people who aren't horror directors per se. So I love, you know, Guillermo del Toro, Devil's Backbone, Jennifer Kent, The Babadook. We've mentioned Frank Darabont and The Mist. I love Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later, Catherine Bigelow, Near Dark, stuff like that. Because I think those non-horror directors kind of bring a skewed vision to the milieu. You know, they don't just replicate the old tired beats. They do something new. That said, I'm wearing a t-shirt right now that says Romero, Craven, Hooper, Argento and Carpenter. I'm wearing it for the occasion. And it's got to be Wes Craven. From within that world, it's got to be Wes Craven. Carpenter's great. Halloween's great. The Thing is great. But Craven did it three times. You know, he reinvented horror three times, like Last House on the Left, Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream. He did it in three decades, and he changed the face of modern horror in each decade. And if that doesn't get in the top spot, I don't know what does. And the other thing is, with the exception probably of Last House on the Left, which is a nasty piece of work that I probably don't recommend people watch these days, with the exception of that, he always remembered that horror was supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of, I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street, as I will tell you about shortly, scares me to utter distraction. But for most people, that's a fun horror movie, you know. And like People Under the Stairs, gateway drug for teenagers. It's a great gateway. If you've got kids who are getting interested in horror, they're like 12, 13, 14, showing People Under the Stairs, and it's just a fairground ride, you know. And he remembered to make it fun. And I think that's why, from within that world, Wes Craven is just unbeatable.
That's a great reason. I know you said your wife is not a horror fan, but she will appease you and watch horror with you sometimes. What is the scariest movie you've ever convinced her to watch?
Well, I feel quite mean about this because my wife basically will, we've stumbled into this arrangement where she will watch a horror film on Halloween with me every year. and we started with Psycho, and it's quite sweet because she watches these films and she thinks she's watching horror movies and I'm picking things that are so benign.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That she's, And then 1 year we watched the Woman in Black, the Daniel Radcliffe Woman in mm-hmm. Black film. And I'd forgotten how pant-wettingly terrifying that film is. It is so scary. And yeah, and she has never quite forgiven me for it. But she has a horrendous startle reflex. She, like, if anything makes a jump, she just cannot handle it at all. Not even horror. Just like if it's an action film and someone's got a gun on someone else, she can't watch it in case it goes off and she freaks out. But also she's, in Twitter terms, she would probably be called, she would probably be considered an empath. I mean, I hate that phrase, but she really feels the suffering of people in desperate circumstances and just can't stand it. Whereas I'm like, make them suffer, make them hurt, you know? And so, yeah. So Woman in Black is the one that scared her the most.
Very nice. So like I said before, you're the host of the podcast Talking Scared, where you talk about horror literature. How did you come up with the idea for Talking Scared?
You know what? I don't know. I think it's the only thing I've got any grounds to actually have an informed opinion on, because like I'm an expert in nothing apart from horror fiction. I like I said, I did a PhD in it, contemporary horror and metafiction. I kind of know my onions, but it happened with, have you heard of the author Paul Tremblay? Are you a horror reader?
Not a horror reader. I won't read Paul Tremblay because I hear that he has a lot of like animal torture in his books, so it's just not for me.
Okay, well, we I'll give you some more warnings on that in a moment. But okay. So Paul Tremblay, I interviewed randomly. I just took a chance and got his book and interviewed him for Slant magazine years ago. And off the back of that, I kind of had his email address. And I had this idea to do this podcast. But I thought I'd be getting, you know, really fledgling authors with no profile, which would have been fine, you know. But I just wrote to Paul and said, look, would you be my first guest? And because he said yes, and he's such a big deal, with that as my calling card, I then went from publisher to publisher just saying, like, look, do you want to be, can this person be on my show? And they just kept saying yes. And I don't understand why everyone isn't doing it. Because if you just put an email together and you're polite and courteous and honest and genuine, you can get these people to talk to you. And it's just been great. There are no people I've never met who I can call friends there are people whose books I used to pick up in the bookshop and think of them as famous people, and now they're my friends and I've never met them, and that is the power of podcasting.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. The internet can be great for some things.
Yeah, and it's been great during lockdown because it's given me some kind of window on the world, kind of both outgoing and ingoing. Like, my listeners talk to me, I talk to people all over the world. And it's been nice when I'm sat in my little garret studio to be able to talk to, you know, a horror writer in Australia about how COVID is going there and stuff. So yeah, it's been a blessing.
Definitely. What are your favorite horror novels?
Well, my favorite book of all time is Stephen King's It. That's my favorite book at a margin too wide to really convey. That book means so much to me. I'm hoping to get some lines from it tattooed on my arm. I've been putting it off for years, but I love it. I mean, probably my top five would all be Stephen King books, but that's boring. So Paul Tremblay, A Head Full of Ghosts, is just, it does for possession what Scream did for the slasher. It's an incredibly self-aware, recursive, self-commenting take on possession. That's amazing. Shirley Jackson's House on Haunting of Hill House is probably the most important ghost story ever written. I would say the book that will split a room, and you, I don't know if you're aware of it, is a book called House of Leaves by Mark Danielewski.
It's the one that's written in like squares and circles, and
yeah. It kind of ended postmodern horror before it began. So it came out in 2000, and since then everyone's been chasing this postmodern horror high, and it's pointless. Because there's nothing that they can do that he hasn't done in that book. It's just, for your listeners' benefit, I'll elaborate briefly because I could talk all night. But it's a fake academic document about a house that is larger on the inside than the outside. And a guy called Will Navidson is filming his experience of this house. And it's very weird and it's very obscure. And you don't ever really get a sense of what is actually the threat. It's just this sense of dread. whilst you're reading that book, which is, you know, as much footnotes as it is text, you also get this secondary narrative by a character called Johnny Truan, who is a person who has found the book you are reading and is commenting in the margins about how the book is starting to disrupt his life, and the threat is moving from one text into the next. And the overwhelming threat that you get is that it could happen to you as a reader, that danger could come into your world as well. It's a trip. I remember sitting in my office one Saturday morning when I was working in the university with a mirror, cracking a code in this book, thinking, what am I doing with my life? You know, like, what is this? But yeah, so It, House of Leaves, Misery, stuff like that. But yeah.
Nice. Now, I think I had heard that House of Leaves was like one of the most difficult books to read of all time. So I bought it for my dad many years ago because he loves to read. But I didn't realize that it was a horror book. So he probably never read it. Maybe I'll go steal his copy back.
Well, there is Mark Danielewski himself says it's a love story. I mean, where he gets to that, I don't know. But it's it's not a horror book in the way that any other book is a horror book. So he can probably read it and not realize it's a horror book, if that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. What's your favorite horror story, your horror novel?
I don't read any horror novels. I read The House on Haunted Hill. That's the only horror novel I've ever read. I kind of found it a little boring. But yeah, I've tried to read books about haunted houses in America, around America, and they just scare the shit out of me. So
really?
Yeah. And then Paul Tremblay, like I said, I can't deal with like the very descriptive passages about animal mutilation. So I've just always skipped those. Ruth Ware, she's kind of like a mystery thriller writer. Mm-hmm. Like The Woman in Cabin 10, that was really good. So an article came out in 2020 that said that horror movie fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that was the case?
Well, most of us have read or seen Stephen King's The Stand or something like it. And 99.9% of the population died. And then we got a whole like war between the forces of good and evil, which you could say we've had in this pandemic, to be fair. But I think we've seen how bad it could be. And when it wasn't that bad, it was okay. But it's interesting because as I said at the start of this, I'm just riddled with fears about various things, and hypochondria is up there. And if you'd written down the narrative of the whole COVID-19 thing, it's my worst nightmare. And the weirdest thing that happened is when it was in China and it was unknown and unspecified, I was terrified. Like, I had 2 months of just abject terror, my worst nightmare, this thing circling that we don't know what it is and what it's going to do. The minute it hit the UK, I stopped being frightened. And it's like the bad thing had become real and I could contain it. I could put it in a box. I knew what the rules were. Once that happened, I was fine. I was the one reassuring my family and my friends. It was really strange. Yeah. And the same things happened with the whole Ukraine, Putin, hand on the nukes thing, you know, like really, really nerve-wracking. That was my great terrors, you know, as a neurotic teenager, the idea of global thermonuclear war. And now that we're kind of, obviously it's not happened, but it's, you know, being muted and being talked about, I'm just kind of like, oh, fuck it. If we've got to die to protect, like, you know, I read someone on Twitter said that there are worse ways for the human race to go extinct than demanding that tyranny is not the default state of our species. And I'm like, yeah, fuck it. If we've got to go, because we won't let this guy push us, we've got to go. You know, 3 months ago, it would have been my worst nightmare. So I just think when things get real, horror fans, we apply this horror movie narrative. And when that is averted, we're kind of okay with what's left.
Yeah, I love that so much. I was the same with COVID-19. I had a trip planned to go to Portugal in early March 2020. And I was freaking out about COVID. Nobody else cared. They're like, it's fine. You go on your trip. It's not going to come here. It's not going to be a big deal. I brought like a thermometer with me, freaking out. And then I went, and Portugal still hadn't had any cases, but it was all over Italy and like a bunch of other European countries. And then I got back and then it came here and I'm like, oh, well, okay. I guess I'm just going to stay inside now. And then it wasn't so scary because it wasn't really an unknown anymore. You knew what it was going to do. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're in New York, right?
Yeah.
In the city.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of had the closest thing to the horror movie pandemic situation. Because I remember when we were getting the news, it was like Italy was really bad and New York would just look terrifying. So if you can survive that, I think you're pretty good. I think you're okay.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as bad as the news was making it out to be. Yeah. Don't listen to the news. It wasn't that scary. There was a lot of death, which is terrible, but I mean, it wasn't like looting everywhere. So,
right. Yeah.
So how do you decide what you want to watch when you're looking for something to watch? A horror movie, obviously.
So it depends on my mood, because there are things I just cannot watch depending on how fucked up my head is that week. I'm making myself sound like a real lunatic, and I'm okay. I have anxious proclivities, but so I have to be careful. But I'm also a real slave to this kind of Netflix culture where how do I describe it? It's like sometimes I've got Amazon Prime, I've got Disney, and I've got Netflix, right? That's a lot of content. And I fall into this trap of, rather than enjoying my media, I treat it like a checklist. Like, seen that, yep, seen that, can get that. It's like the goal is to empty my Netflix watch list rather than enjoying the damn thing. You know what I mean? So, like, this show has actually re-inspired me to start watching horror, because I've been listening to it in preparation. And I'm like, I suddenly realized I haven't watched much horror in the last 2 years. I've watched three films this weekend. And like last night on Netflix, I watched A Classic Horror Story. Have you seen it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to watch it. Didn't want to watch it at all. It was like, well, that's on the list, so let's get it off the list. Rather than watch the thing I wanted to watch.
Yeah.
And it was terrible, by the way. But today I watched Revenge for the first time.
I saw that on your Twitter. What do you think?
Oh, it's blown me away.
Yeah.
So Mathilde Lutz, who I didn't realize I was watching, it was in the film I watched last night, the Classic Horror Story. So it's all a big net. She's just phenomenal. And she actually just liked my tweet, which gave me a bit of a bit of a dopamine drip, serotonin rush. But yeah, Revenge, just wow. Like, the visuals are stunning. The gore is awful, but kind of fun. You know, it's kind of fun gore, like, rather than, I mean, the bit when he cuts his foot, oh my God, I was just like chewing the armchair, you know, like, but I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was really interesting what they did with the whole male and male gaze thing, that you're kind of encouraged to ogle her in the first sort of third of the movie. You're encouraged, it's titillating, and you're supposed to look at her in this kind of hypersexualized way. And as it goes on, she becomes like this badass warrior who's attracted for different reasons. And all of a sudden, all the men are naked and vulnerable. And I think it's quite a cool subversion. Yeah. I haven't answered your question, sorry. So I first of all weigh up what I can take that day. I think, you know, how dark can I go? And then I generally try and clear something off my Netflix list that I should watch. And if I'm in a good mood, I'll finally take the plunge and watch something that I've wanted to watch for a while.
Nice. I just watched a movie that's new to Netflix last night called Swarm. It's a French horror movie.
Okay.
It's about a woman who runs a locust farm.
Okay.
It's a slow burn for sure. Like, nothing happens in the first 40 minutes, but then it gets real gross. So when you said that, I
didn't expect slow burn. I thought it was going to be like B-movie, schlocky kind of nonsense.
No, it's a French movie. So it's in French.
Oh, okay.
It's very dark and dreary and it's very slow. Like, I remember looking up the plot because I was like, did I miss anything? Because I don't think there's anything going on, and I had not missed anything. So.
Okay. So would you recommend, or?
Yeah. There's some good like body horror in it. Mm-hmm. So.
Cool.
Are there any horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't watch ever again?
Yeah. So this is the meaty answer, because there are probably more horror films I don't want to watch than I do. I am a fan of this genre, by the way. I sound like I don't watch anything. I am a fan. But I don't know whether it's the pandemic or my mental health or whatever, but I struggle more and more stuff. So I really have a problem with anything to do with possession.
Oh, okay.
Which is weird because I'm a kind of committed atheist. Mm. I don't believe in any of this stuff. But possession narratives, I can actually tell you why. I can tell you why they freak me out. When I was younger, I watched The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
So I watched that and it scared me a fair amount in the way it's supposed to. And I watched it with my then girlfriend at university, who decided to play a prank by waking me up in the middle of the night, contorting on the floor, like replicating a scene from the film, which freaked me out. And then I thought of it, and I watched it again years later, like a decade later, with my mum, of all people. And I was having a hard time, and I had a genuine panic attack watching the scene, the exorcism scene. And one of the problematic things with anxiety disorders is that you get intrusive thoughts. And there's a great book, a fantastic horror novel called Come Closer by Sarah Gran, which is about possession. And it offers the idea that intrusive thoughts may not be intrusive thoughts. They may be something that's inhabiting you that you don't know is there. And that whole thing for someone who has anxiety issues is just a minefield I cannot tiptoe into. Do you know what I mean? It's just I.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really wary about anything to do with possession or people being taken over by forces outside themselves. It just really bothers me. But, you know, I now and again, I will watch something. Like The Conjuring, for example, if she's possessed, doesn't bother me in the slightest because it's kind of silly, you know.
Yeah.
But this new breed of very somber, sober, dour possession stories like The Medium or the film I don't want to watch is The Dark and the Wicked. Although I kind of do want to watch it. That thing about pushing yourself, you know, but yeah. I kind of want to, but at the same, like every so often I kind of take it off my shudder list. And then when I'm in a good mood, I put it back on. And then when I'm vulnerable, I think, no, I'll take it off. And so stuff like that really dour possession stuff, just not into. And the other thing, a bit more fun, I'll never, ever again watch A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, why not?
So I watched it when I was 12 with my gran. I should have mentioned in the question about, you know, why I love horror. My grandma was a massive horror fan.
Oh.
And we watched, like, Alien when I was 8. And we, you know, we watched, like, I remember watching Scream with her for the first time on VHS. And she loved it. Like, this 8-year-old lady. I would spend weekends with her just watching horror movies when I was really young. And we watched Nightmare on Elm Street. And, yeah, it scared me as much as it should scare a 12-year-old boy, you know. And then when I was in the middle of my PhD and on the cusp of like nervous breakdown, because that's what that stuff does to you, I had a dream. I had a Freddy Krueger dream. The worst kind of dreams to have. And I was 30 years old. And I had this Freddy Krueger dream and it fucked me up because I wasn't in a good place and it screwed me up. And obviously I know it's not real, but I just don't want to think about it. If I see a picture of him, if anyone mentions his name, any reference at all to Freddy Krueger, and I literally feel my heart go bump, like it's a real Pavlovian response.
Oh,
so
wow.
I will never watch that film again.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah.
Huh. Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters?
Well, that's a good question. I should have thought about it. Oh, yes. Right. Two, actually, I think about it. Two. One, kind of adjacent to a theater. So The Conjuring, I saw in the cinema, and it was just a great time, you know, like packed house, Saturday night, packed, just the perfect, like, you know, cinema going horror experience. Everyone's laughing at the scream and the laugh, which I love from the communal experience. Except I was sitting with my girlfriend next to us on his own was this older guy who just laughed at completely random moments. So that you'd be sitting, there'd be utter silence, and he would just do this really throaty giggle, and it was the most unnerving thing.
Oh.
And the other one is that when I was, well, I'd been about 16, and we were going to go and see the Blair Witch movie, the Blair Witch Project in the cinema, and we'd already set up, we were planning to watch it and then go and camp in the woods near my house, and we'd set the tent up, And on the way to the cinema, we got mugged at knife point.
Wow.
Six of us got mugged by two people. It's kind of embarrassing, really. We were only kids. And we got mugged at knife point, and they stole my phone and my jacket. But then we were fine, so we just went to the cinema. And I remember I rang my mum from a payphone, because it was before, you know, no cell phones then. Actually, I just said he stole my phone. So maybe there were cell phones. I can't remember. I called my mum, and she was like furious that I'd gone to the cinema, but I thought no more of it. This is true. Saturday night, all my friends, I was a teenager. We watched The Blair Witch Project. About 20 minutes in, the lights go up. I look over, and my mum is storming up the aisle of the cinema, looking with an usher nervously in her wake, and she yanked me out of the row and took me to the police station.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So the Blair Witch Project has never been that scary to me, because when all that has happened, it kind of fell by the wayside a little bit.
Oh wow. That is incredible / horrifying / funny.
Yeah. The mortification. Honestly, so embarrassing.
Yeah. So what has been your favorite horror movie that you've seen so far in 2022?
Well, I'm not going to lie, probably Revenge. I've seen not much great stuff. Like I watched the new Texas Chainsaw, and I thought it was fun, but, you know, unnecessary. Too much of a cash in on the new Halloween stuff with this, like the final girl coming back. And so it was fun, but nothing to remember. What else have I watched? I watched Last Night in Soho. That was great, but not scary, but a great film. Antlers, I hated. Candyman, wasn't that impressed with, to be honest. Yeah, probably Revenge. I don't think I've seen anything better than that. Maybe not even in 2021. I think it really blew me away. And I watched that just today. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
Scream 5 is probably my favorite thing that I've seen in 2022, or Fresh, which is new on Hulu, or probably Disney for you. I'm not sure.
I haven't heard of Fresh. What's Fresh?
Fresh is about the horrors of modern dating, I'll say.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's really good. I don't, in England, do you get Hulu through Disney Plus?
Possibly. I cannot keep track of this stuff at all. Yeah. But Scream 5, I haven't seen it yet, because I'm not really going to the cinema to see horror, because my wife hates it. My dad hates it. And I really miss, because people aren't really going back to the cinema that much here because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And I really miss like the big packed auditorium experience, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've been watching stuff at home. So I haven't seen Scream 5, but I know that you weren't a fan of Scream 4. So have they redeemed it with Scream 5?
Yeah, Scream 5 definitely had a similar tone to Scream 1. Or I'm not even sure if they were similar in their tone, but it was just a lot. It was darker. It was more serious than the other sequels. So I liked it. Yeah.
Because I think of Scream primarily as a comedy. I don't really think of it as a horror movie. So I'd be interested to see if it went darker. I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, it's streaming online now, so you can catch it.
Okay.
So, yeah. What horror movie are you most looking forward to seeing in the rest of 2022?
Probably overall, The Black Phone.
Yeah.
Because I love Joe Hill. I'm trying to get Joe Hill on my show. He's proving elusive. My plan is get Joe, then get his dad. You know, that's the plan. But yeah, it's The Black Phone. It's a great short story. I've read his short story. It's in a collection called 20th Century Ghosts, which is for me the best single author collection of the century. So probably that. I don't think it'll be scary at all. I predict it's utterly unfrightening. I think it'll be kind of like a dark. I imagine it's going to be something kind of like Doctor Sleep. You know, like a film that's about horrible things, mm-hmm. but isn't necessarily scary in of itself. Yeah. But Ethan Hawke looks creepy as fuck in it. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to X, the new Ty West movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that comes out this week. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got strong Texas Chainsaw vibes, which
that's what I thought. When I first saw the beginning of the trailer, I was like, oh, is this the new Texas Chainsaw? And it was not. But
yeah, it's kind of grainy footage. Yeah, sort of, and they look like it's the 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to see that on Thursday. So,
hopefully. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I don't think it's out in the cinema. It's not out in my local cinema here at all. It's not. I've seen no mention of it.
It's limited.
So.
Yeah. I think it's very limited. So
yeah, so that I'm also looking forward to Nope because, you know,
yeah,
it looks cool. Mm-hmm. And the other one is The Northman, the new Robert mm-hmm. Eggers movie.
Yeah.
Probably not a horror film in the true sense, but it, yeah, I mean, Alexander Skarsgård running amok with a big sword looks like a fun time for anybody.
Yeah. Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
Hmm. Yeah, I, for my sins, I really, really like Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Oh.
I'm not a massive slasher fan, to be honest. I tend to like the slashers that are a bit more offbeat. Like, I love, like, Ready or Not. I love... What's the one? Oh, not Ready or Not. You're Next. I really love You're Next.
Yeah, that was
you know,
great.
That's, like, a cool slasher. Stuff like that where I'm kind of bored of many masks, right? And this is sacrilege. I think Michael Myers is a dull character. I think he's great in Halloween, in the first Halloween, because he's frightening because he's unknowable. He was called The Thing, you know, that was his character name. And I think subsequently, like, I get that lots of people say horror shouldn't explain itself and horror shouldn't have, you know, it should just be what it is. But like, if we're going to watch what with like about 14 different iterations of a man walking in the William Shatner mask, can we have some insight into who he is, please? And I did like that Rob Zombie made it grimy and kind of pulled back the mask a little bit, you know? So and I know people really hate it, but I here's the biggest sacrilege. I think I probably liked Rob Zombie's Halloween more than David Gordon Green's Halloween in 2018.
Okay.
I know that's I feel kind of dirty saying it, but and the other one, which I'm not sure everyone hates but a lot of people hate, is The Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
Because I think it's a comedy. I think it's a very dark comedy, but I think it's a comedy in the same way I think Hostel is a comedy. And I think they're being the if you look at them in that way, the grimness dissipates a little bit. So I quite like it. I have a friend who was really disturbed by The Devil's Rejects, really badly disturbed by it, felt unclean for watching it, and I loved it.
Very cool. What I was going to say before is that I hope The Black Phone is scary because it's the same director as Sinister, and Sinister was very frightening. So,
really?
So yeah. What
scared you?
The videos, I think, and the fact that like okay. you didn't know what was going on and... You didn't know how it was going to end. Yeah.
And here's a lawnmower. Yeah, it's... The whole thing with... Is it Bagul, the character? Yeah. That's the baddie, right? Bagul. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing about, like, once you see him, you can't... That's it. He's in your life and stuff.
Yeah.
That's exactly the kind of weird psychological shit that plays on my mind. When I said at the start that, like, I can't just go, it's just a movie, you know?
Yeah.
So I was really, really reticent to watch that film because I was like, I'm going to end up thinking that I'm being haunted by this demon for a week. Like when I watched The Ring, I unplugged the TV, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. But yeah, it just didn't bother me. Just didn't get, I loved it. I think it's a great film. Again, Ethan Hawke, Man Can Do No Wrong, great cardigans. But it didn't scare me, but I found it fascinating because my favorite trope in all of horror is the bit when they go to the library and research it.
Yeah.
Or they go to the university and like, it's yeah. happened before. And all. I love that trope. I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did like it. But I just don't think it'll be scary because I think this is The Black Phone now. I think it's going to just be kind of really interesting jump scares, but nothing that's going to make a lasting impression. Mm-hmm. I think it'll just be kind of like a roller coaster ride to best in the cinema.
If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
That is a great question. So the first thing that came to mind is The Children of the Corn.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's such a brilliant idea. And that film doesn't do it justice. Like the main kid who plays Isaac is scary as hell. But the film just doesn't do it justice. And I think for no other reason than that idea, you know, a town full of kids who've killed their parents, that idea deserves better treatment in the hands. I mean, imagine if Mike Flanagan took that on. It'd just be incredible. Yeah. But the other one, for more technical reasons, is World War Z.
Oh, okay.
Because it pissed me off. And I don't get it. I mean, the book of World War Z is phenomenal. It's basically written like a series of excerpts from, it's like an oral history of the zombie war. That's what it's subtitled. And the idea is this guy is going around in the wake of the zombie war. We've won the war. And he's going around interviewing people all over the world. And it's kind of like snapshots of different cultures' responses to this thing. And it's such a cool idea. And then they made basically the Brad Pitt action film. Yeah. And what I don't get, what I really don't understand, is that the book is like a full documentary, essentially. That film came out at a time when the two biggest kind of trends in horror were found footage and the zombie. And I don't get how someone didn't go, let's make a full documentary about zombies. I mean, it writes itself. And I spoke to the author, Max Brooks, and he was very gracious about the film. And kind of said, you know, Brad Pitt gave me a career because off the back of the film, everyone bought my book. He was very, very gracious. But you could tell even he thought, like, what did you do to my book, man? Like, that's not what this story was. Mm. So, yeah, probably of the two, I think World War Z is more important.
Very cool. No one's ever said that before. So that's interesting to hear.
Cool.
Yeah. So my last question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
I was going to do a whole fake pause and pretend I'd not thought. I have thought about this long and hard. It would be Annie Wilkes from Misery.
Oh, how come?
Because she likes reading. So let's face it, like, me and Annie Wilkes could sit down and we could talk all day long about, she could read Paul Sheldon, I'll read Stephen King. It's the same person anyway. And we could have a big old chat about Stephen King or Paul Sheldon. She could make me chicken soup. She'd call me a dirty bird. I don't mind. We'd get on fine. And I think she'd leave my ankles alone. So yeah, it would be Annie Wilkes probably.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here and chatting with me. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah, definitely. So it's across the social media sphere. It's Talk Scared Pod. You can email me directly at Talking Scared Pod. Someone bought the talk out. So it's Talk Scared Pod on social, Talking Scared Pod on email. I'm still in the process of building a website, but if you go to anywhere you can get podcasts and type in Talking Scared, you'll find, I think, my 84 episodes of conversations with horror authors.
Well, thank you so much again for being here.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a blast.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Neil McRobert, and thanks again to Neil for coming on. I'll leave links to his podcast and his social media handles in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter at Who's There Pod, or on Instagram at Who's There Podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and get vaccinated.